All right, we're back now with more of Greater LA. I'm Saul Gonzalez, in for Steve Chiatakis. Tomorrow, we're going to bring you a story about safety and security on LA's metro system. But for today, we take a wider view of mobility in Los Angeles. I'm telling you absolutely nothing new when I say that cars are synonymous with the story of LA and how the city has grown and now looks and feels. After all, how many of you listening to me right now are in your car as you're stuck in traffic and inching along to get to your destination? So, can LA ever break its dependence on the automobile as we've known it? And can it learn how to design the city for people first and vehicles second? Well, maybe. In a new book, Renewing the Dream, The Mobility Revolution and the Future of Los Angeles, a group of experts look at how LA is at the forefront of developing alternatives to the car and the car-centric metropolis. Joining us to discuss are the book's editor, James Sanders, and two contributors, Frances Anderton, KCRW listeners know her, and Matt Ducharme. Thanks all for joining us.
Thank you, Saul. It's great to talk to you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
James, I'm going to start with you. So when it comes to LA and mobility, what's the dream we're trying to renew?
Well, Los Angeles is a complex city, as everyone knows, and actually is an overlay of several cities. Christopher Hawthorne, the former chief design officer of Los Angeles, defined it in three waves, which we sort of adopted. Wave one was the wave that built the city, which was the streetcar and boulevard city of before World War II. And anybody who ever watched Who Framed Roger Rabbit will know all about that that city, the city of the big red Pacific Electric cars and the long, endless boulevards that went everywhere. The second city, the city we're more familiar with, is the post-war city, the city of the freeway and the tract house of 1950s and 1960s Los Angeles, which not only remade the region of Los Angeles, but became the model of cities around the world. Every modern city really based itself on the kind of decentralized, car-oriented, single-family house-oriented model of urban development. But our argument is that since roughly the year 2000, those two models have been superseded by a third model, a complexer, more dense model, which involves transit, new forms of mobility. We've got things like Uber and Lyft transforming the situation. You've got e-scooters, you've got e-bikes, you've got on the horizon autonomous vehicles, you've got electric vehicles coming in. So all of these changes create a situation where we think the city is kind of up for grabs in terms of thinking about its future.
You know, I'm on the freeways a lot. Traffic seems just as bad as it always has been. It's back to pre-pandemic levels. So how are these changes manifesting themselves? Where are they?
Well, one obvious way is the densification of the city, which is dramatic. The city that was once almost entirely a city 50 years ago, roughly, of single-family houses being built is now dramatically turning into a city of multiple dwellings, of apartment houses basically being built. Of the 23,000 new units that were permitted in 2023, there were 13,000 were five houses or more, and only 1,387 were single-family. In other words, 10 to 1 of apartment buildings to new single-family dwellings. So the kind of iconic vision of the city is really changing, and you see it in other places too. I used to rent a car when I came to Los Angeles. Nowadays, when you go to the Hertz rental hall in LAX, it's often kind of deserted because people are saying, why bother rent a car when I could just take Uber everywhere?
Frances, in the book, you talk about the fundamental importance of parking lots and the history of parking lots to all of this and this issue. Talk more about that.
Well, I think that one thing that is a through line to the book, actually, is the degree to which parking the cars that get people to this single family based lifestyle is absolutely part and parcel of the development of Los Angeles, to the point that an absolutely extraordinary amount of square footage of square miles in this region is given over to places to park the car, whether it's the single family home with the large driveway, whether it's the generous amount of curb space that's given over to parking. Yes, there is a big shift happening in terms of how the city's developed. I think we are layering on greater density. I think that greater density does require also that people change their mobility systems and that they do perhaps choose to use the mass transit system that's going back in, that is also part of the sort of mobility revolution that James refers to. However, people aren't quite there yet. So what we are really seeing is this sort of hybrid kind of density where we will see, multi-storey apartment buildings going up right by the emerging transit lines. You know as well as I do, you go to Culver City now, it's completely different. It's downtown from 25 years ago. However, there's still a good amount of parking that's being provided for these multifamily buildings because we're not quite at the point where people are able to sort of fully give up the old style. So I think we're in a very interesting sort of transitional stage. People surrounding sort of planning and housing are all pushing for ways in which to pull back the parking mandates. You know, one of the big factors in the shaping of this region and the forms, literally the forms our housing has taken, are these parking mandates, whereby starting in about the 1930s, property owners, developers are told how a parking minimum they have to provide. So it's something like one car per household, it becomes 1.5 cars per household. And these parking mandates have stymied, actually, a lot of creativity in how we might live in Los Angeles. And they've also been attached to commercial developments. So as a result, we have seen untold amounts of parking being provided, and it has shaped a lifestyle.
Yeah. And the idea there, right, is that if you reduce parking requirements, if you reduce the amount of parking spaces, that encourages people to try other options that don't involve the automobile, right?
Yes. We do find ourselves in somewhat of a political tussle, because what will happen is a TOC, you know, transit-oriented communities, transit-oriented development, TOD, is being encouraged at a planning and a political level. That's, you know, put up the apartment buildings, buy the mass transit, take away the parking, and thereby encourage people to sort of shift and change the way they use the city. But what happens is you'll have adjacent neighbourhoods of perhaps lower-rise or single-family neighbourhoods where the residents of that neighbourhood get nervous about a bunch of people moving in who don't have parking, but are they actually going to give up on the car? Well, no, they're probably not all going to give up on the car. So where are they going to park their cars? Well, they're going to park their cars probably in a side street, and that could be my street. And so there's a lot of tension surrounding the parking issue. Now, at the same time, there's a lot of creativity. Say, for example, the communal or the collectively used parking structure. There are certainly young developers who are looking at how to perhaps do some lower density multifamily developments. That's sort of not the towers, you know, it's not even perhaps the 7-story or 5 to 7-story buildings. It's more like the 2 to 3-story buildings, perhaps in lower rise neighborhoods where it can be penciled out and shoehorned in. And in those neighborhoods, developers are thinking about, can we put a parking structure that's used by several different complexes? And so people are starting to have ideas that are really kind of transitional ideas, I think, trying to navigate the transition that we're in.
Sure. Matt, hey, you've been very patient, so I want to turn to you. I understand you've helped create a couple of case studies for what a future LA might look like, or at least places in a future LA. Could you talk more about that?
Yes, absolutely. What's interesting is we began producing a series of programs and studies really on the relationship between mobility, parking, land use and development in 2018 with James. And one of the things that we are particularly proud of in this book is that it looks to the history of Los Angeles, and then it projects forward. And so what we do is we look at actually the scale, the macro scale of the city of Los Angeles, and look at things such as, well, what is really the opportunity of space and parking? And that's a significant impact in terms of the infrastructure and the fabric of the city of Los Angeles. But then we also look at the micro as well. So we look at individual sites and the impact, really importantly, on communities and on people. So one very good example of this, and it's a case study that kind of closes out the book, is called Recharge LA, which was a part of Pump to Plug, which Christopher Hawthorne had created a symposium back in 2020 during the pandemic, looking at what happens when you convert the gas station sites in the city of Los Angeles into EV charging stations. So what we looked at is, well, what could the potential of this be? The infrastructural aspect of charging your car, allowing for that mobility. You know, historically, we had looked at things like Googie architecture and the gas stations that were really acting as the decorated shedders, this moment to almost advertise what's happening there and the democratization of mobility. And thinking about projecting forward with this new technology of EV charging and understanding what the potential could be. So, for instance, what we looked at is, you know, can you have a site that has the opportunity for a real flexibility of use? Because EV charging does not have the volatility of, say, a gas station, you could do a lot of different things with that particular site that you couldn't with a gas station. So we looked at an opportunity for a framework of really creating different uses throughout the day. In one instance, you would be charging your car throughout the day, but then in another, we created this movable infrastructure that you will be able to see in the book. That changes and uses a screen actually to project a movie screen throughout the day. So understanding that this has had such a profound impact on the fabric of the city of Los Angeles, and thinking about what a new technology and infrastructure around mobility could be and what those opportunities could be.
And can I just step back here and maybe play the role of the skeptic? I mean, all of you have your criticisms of Los Angeles and how the city has evolved in a wrong way in a lot of ways when it comes to transportation and urban planning. But do you acknowledge that there are a lot of people who kind of dig the city? I mean, they like it, or at least they've made a compact where they say to themselves, you know, yes, I may have an hour or 2 hour commute to Santa Clarita from Los Angeles, but when I get to Santa Clarita, I got my front yard, I got my backyard, I'm willing to pay that price. Do you acknowledge that there are a lot of people who think that way and they don't want to see any serious changes?
I think you're absolutely spot on, Sol. I think that the lifestyle that Los Angeles offered, which was an alternative to dense, packed, often rather polluted cities, was absolutely seductive. And it remains to be. It remains very seductive. It also is now out of reach for most people financially, because there simply isn't the virgin land on which to create that lifestyle. And it also has reached the end of the road in terms of there being no more space. So it's become very jammed. And so, yes, one does sit in the car for 2 hours getting to Santa Clarita. However, it is still a very hard dream to relinquish. It truly is. And that is why this transition that has to happen, because the region can't go any other way, but nonetheless, it's a difficult one because it is demanding of people to actually give up on that dream and embrace another dream. I'm an advocate for multifamily living. I think there's a lot of benefits to multifamily living in LA. We have a wonderful legacy of housing types that support that. However, that doesn't mean that that's what everybody wants. And what is on the shoulders now of planners, politicians, designers, like the team that's on this call today, is to really sell this other dream and make it as alluring as the one that you've just laid out.
Yeah. And James, let me come back to you. And that is, you know, when it comes to these solutions, let's say LA and Southern California does everything you think it should do. First off, what timeline are we looking at? And then number two, how many people does it really affect? Are we just talking about solutions that at the end of the day, they affect the problems, things like congestion at the margins? But if we all come back and talk together in the year 2050, there's still going to be a hell of a lot of traffic on the 405 freeway at 6 o'clock.
Well, we acknowledge that in the book. There are 6 million cars on the road in the region, in the Los Angeles region, and they're not going anywhere, so to speak. But as Francis points out, you know, we can't build any new freeways for a whole host of reasons, environmental and otherwise. So we're pretty fixed with the amount of capacity that we have on these roads. We absolutely acknowledge that, you know, this does not mean that everybody in Los Angeles has to change their way of life. I also want to point out that when you talk about eliminating parking minimums, developers will decide, it gives freedom to developers to decide how much parking they think ought to be there. And they're not fools. They will find out how much parking is mandated. But, you know, no, absolutely. It goes to the heart of the tension that is in the name of the book. We acknowledge the power of that dream. We do point out that there is such a vast amount of space, just, for example, given over to parking across the city of Los Angeles and the region, that you could house 1.5 million people at existing densities if you were to simply build on the surface parking lots that we currently have. And that's all across the city. And you can develop them as you want, but no skyscrapers in single-family districts. And it would change substantially the fabric of the city. And yes, finally, it will take decades. And, you know, as Francis says, this is a question of transition. And this is a city building, and it unfolds over decades and indeed centuries. So we're looking at something now that may unfold over generations for our children and our grandchildren.
All right. The book is Renewing the Dream, The Mobility Revolution and the Future of Los Angeles. James Sanders is the editor. Francis Anderton and Matt Ducharme contributed to the collection. And by the way, if you want to learn more, you can catch James and Francis in conversation with UCLA's Donald Shoup. By the way, he's kind of the world's expert on parking. That's this Friday at Book Soup. Thank you all for joining us on Greater LA.
Thank you. Thank you, Saul.
Thank you, Saul.
Thank you, Saul.
That was an interesting conversation. I hope you thought so, too. Tomorrow, we return to transportation in response to crime and safety concerns on LA mass transit that surged during the pandemic. Metro is making a big push to improve the ridership experience and also help the many homeless people who use transit for temporary shelter. Jump on the train with me as we all find out more together. You can check out the show online anytime at kcrw.com/GLA. You can also leave feedback there, good, bad, or otherwise, and provide a story idea. That's kcrw.com/GLA. Juliana Mayo, Zoe Matthew, Kelsey Gante, Eddie Sun, Sonia Geis, Ray Guarna, Phil Richards, Amy Talk, Carlos Ramirez, Christine Camino, Michael Vogel, and Christian Bardal all made the show possible. It takes a village. I'm your humble guest host, Saul Gonzalez. Thanks so much for listening, and have a good evening. Talk to you again tomorrow.